Blog Talk Radio.
And no music today, Spartan Nation, as we mourn and honor and mark the passing of Spartan legend and great Judd Heathcote. We're not going to have any Judd talk today. We'll save Judd and the Judd thump and all that good stuff for a special Judd Heathcote-only podcast on Thursday. So today we're going to focus in on the Michigan State football team. And their game over the weekend. We'll talk about some college football news and other things that happened over the weekend. And we're going to focus on that. But no music, not really a celebratory mode. Just can't do that with the passing of Judd. I'm Satchma, going to you as always. I'm fine. Fall. I guess we're in fall. We're in September. Is it fall? It doesn't feel like summer anymore. Rolling to you at a fine day. Fine day, joined by the one, the only, the thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation.
Yeah, in addition to noting the passing of Judd Heathcote, we should also, DB, note the passing of Walt Becker.
Walter Becker, yeah, that's right. The other half of the musical duo Steely Dan passed away at age 67. It was announced on Sunday, September 3rd, and Steely Dan, one of my personal favorite all-time, I think, concepts more than you could call them a rock band. Jazz, fusion, and rock kind of mixed together, and I thought something was wrong with Walt Becker a few years ago when I saw them in concert, so yeah, very sad that he's gone, but you know, the great thing about these artists is that the music lives on and on, thankfully.
Yeah, maybe we can celebrate Judd's life on Thursday with a little Steely Dan music to go with it. That could be fun. Yeah, I think that would be a good way to go. All right, with that said, let us turn our attention, DB, to Michigan State's 35-10 victory over Bowling Green. On last week's podcast, I said, and this was by no means foreshadowing at the time, but I said one of the things we wanted to avoid, Michigan State wanted to avoid doing, was getting into a Craig Thomas situation. For those of you of a certain age, you will know what a Craig Thomas situation is. It is driving down to the goal line against a MAC opponent and then fumbling at said goal line, and then which allows the other team to stay in it, gain some confidence, and go on and possibly upset you. As I was watching the Michigan State Bowling Green game, DB, and I saw Michigan State, first of all, accept the ball after winning the toss, which Mark D'Antonio never does, and march down the field ready to score the touchdown, and then L.J. Scott fumble it going to the end zone. I had this sinking feeling in my stomach going, I Bartons, by referring to Craig Thomas on the last podcast. And I was just like, here we go again. Did you have that same feeling I did, DB? And how long did it last, if you did?
Through much of the first half of the game, yeah. That wasn't the way to start. And the whole team just looked like they're kind of feet in the mud a little bit for the first quarter and a half, and then they kind of broke out of it.
Well, it was the two-minute drill at the end of the first half that really rescued Michigan State. End of the half, Brian Lewerke goes from Brian Lewerke can't hit anyone, can't hit the side of a barn, to Brian Lewerke, college quarterback that can run a two-minute drill and lead a team to a touchdown. It was a really weird transformation, DB.
Yeah, Lewerke impressed me as the game went on. I think Lewerke, you know, was showing in the game he had some rust. He had some major rust. Yeah, he competed in fall camp here, or summer camp, whatever you want to call it, but he didn't have a lot of live action. And, you know, he got his footing, and I have to say I was very impressed with what I saw as the game went on.
All right, so I think the best way to look at this game, right, is, first of all, we have to accept the fact that we played Bowling Green, and Bowling Green isn't good. I mean, it is not good. Maybe the fact of the matter is, if they had a quarterback, I don't know, as good. In the Indiana quarterback isn't great, but he's reasonably good. If they had a quarterback as good as the Indiana quarterback, they might have put up 40 points. Is that a reasonable thing for me to say?
That is absolutely reasonable for you to say. That appeared to be the case. Our secondary got lucky that Bowling Green just doesn't have much of an offense.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. We got lucky that the Bowling Green quarterback isn't very good. We got lucky that on the occasions that the Bowling Green quarterback was good, the receivers weren't very good. And so, luck had a lot to do with it. So I think the best way to go about doing this is, while acknowledging that Michigan State played Bowling Green, is to try and figure out what parts of the Spartan team makes us optimistic, what parts of this Spartan team makes us pessimistic and why, and where Michigan State really needs to see growth in order to have a successful season. So I'm going to move from optimistic to pessimistic sort of on my scale, and I'll try doing it by position group and explain why, and just feel free to chime in as I go along. The position group I was most optimistic about were our linebackers, which isn't a surprise. They're clearly the strength of our team. But, D.D., they were remarkable against Bowling Green. I mean, they got pressure. I mean, any pressure that we got on the quarterback came from the linebacking crew, with one exception. I think a defensive lineman broken in there once or twice. But, they were able to cover. They tackled well. They stopped. They were stout against the run. They covered the middle of the field well when they were defending. Generally speaking, the linebackers have the making. This linebacking crew has the making of being something special. I mean, they can run. They can tackle. Fundamentally sound. They didn't give Bowling Green any room to breathe. And if you wanted to look at where this looked like a Big Ten team dominating a MAC team, it was with that linebacking crew.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. There's no question that the linebacking unit is the heart of the defense. You know, when I looked at the stats afterward, you know, the tackles, the assists, they're all in that part of the defense right there. It's the linebackers. They're the ones that are going to do the damage. They look like a Big Ten unit. They look much better than last year, too.
Yeah, Joe Bachy, Chris Fry, Andrew Dowell, Shane Jones, all big games, right? David Dowell got into the game. And so it was all big. And when you take a look at the depth chart at linebacker, there's reason to be happy. Andrew Dowell, Joe Bachy, Chris Fry, then you've got Byron Bulla, Shane Jones. This is a pretty good. And then you have Brandon Randall. This is a pretty good linebacking unit. And then you can go even further down and get to Antoine Simmons, right? And Tyreek Thompson. And you're looking up and down this linebacking crew. There isn't a weakness. And in fact, not only is there not a weakness, to be perfectly fair, this is a linebacking crew that good that Urban Meyer, I just went back 10 years and I have no idea why, but Urban Meyer would happily trade for, or Franklin in Penn State would happily trade for, or almost any team would happily trade. This is an elite unit, and they can't hold the defense together, right? That's we'll get to the pessimistic side. But if there's reason for optimism on the defense, it's this linebacking core. And so, yeah, you're right. All the tackles were on their side. If you take a look at the playmaking, all of that was on with that unit. And so there's a lot of reason to be happy for that. And even on pass coverage, they were very good. And so there's reason to be happy there. The second unit, DB, that I was happy with, or optimistic about, was our wide receiving core. There's some playmakers there. Mm-hmm. There's some speed, there's some size, there's ability to get open, and this reminds me of those Michigan State receiving corps that could catch anything that was thrown at them, DB. It didn't matter whether the pass was behind them, up high, down low, they were able to go and make the catch. Get open, go make the catch, be physical. Everything you want a wide receivers to do, this can do it, and they can make people miss and get yards. I was pretty impressed by them, DB.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Felton Smith had a good game. The whole unit looks like, you know, they're ready to go up and get the ball, and they have a quarterback getting them the ball. So right now, the receivers do bring a lot of optimism. I would agree.
Yeah, Felton Davis is just a beast. I mean, when you get into the red zone, you could just throw it up there, and he has what looks like an amazing catch radius. And you can just take chances with him that you can't with anyone else. Darryl Stewart he's sort of the new R.J. Shelton with all the jet sweeps and that sort of thing. By the way, how many jet sweeps and end-arounds did we run in this game, DB?
I think they emptied out their season allotment of jet sweeps in this game, Satchmo. Well, we'll save that for the pessimistic the coaching.
Yeah. We'll save that for the pessimistic aspect of this. Tristan Jackson showed up well, especially in key possessions. I have a feeling that Tristan Jackson, I mean, while we might see a lot of Davis on these bubble screens and Darryl and or possession Felton Davis in the red zone and key possessions and Stewart on these end arounds and some of the deep routes, I think Stewart's going to be really good at. The guy when the chips are down that Lewerke's going to be looking for is Tristan Jackson, and he came up big. Cam Chambers came up out of nowhere, and I just came up with at least one big catch that I remember. Hunter Risen got some time out there. Larez Nelson got some run out there. Cody White looks like he can play. White, Risen, Nelson, true freshman DB. This is remarkable. Jackson's a true sophomore. Stewart's a redshirt sophomore. And Davis is a junior. This is a wide receiving corps that's going to get better. They're not just going to get better this year, but next year, the potential is there for this not to be a good wide receiving corps, but a great wide receiving corps.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they're already showing me a lot of things. I was very impressed with what I saw.
Yeah, agreed. So let's then head sort of the next reason for optimism in Brian Lewerke. So Lewerke had a weird start to this game, DB. He started off running the ball fine, right? But and his numbers are really weird because his throwing numbers, and I couldn't believe this at the end of the game when I saw it, his throwing numbers were 22 for 33 for 250. Did it feel like he wasn't that good as you were watching the game?
I can see what you're saying. He made some plays. There's a lot of optimism that I feel with Lewerke. I mean, he's got a ways to go, of course. He's pretty good on his feet. I was laughing at one stat. We haven't gotten to the rushing yet, but I'm just going to say this anyway since we're on to Lewerke. He led the team in rushing. We haven't seen a quarterback. When's the last time a Spartan quarterback led the team in rushing? It seems to me you might have to go back to, what, Damon Dowdell? Or, I mean, who was it?
Drew Stanton?
Drew Stanton, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's the direction you have to head in, I think, if you think about that. Yeah, so here are the things I liked about Lewerke. I liked his feet. I liked his ability to run. I liked his ability to extend the play. And so all of those things were good. The things I didn't like about Lewerke is one, he was all over the place with his throws, low, high, left, right, underthrew a wide open Felton Davis on a deep route. I mean, in the first possession of the game, he was just all, and two, his receivers' credits, right? They rescued him. If the ball was low, they went and scooped it up. They got their arms under. If the ball was high, they went up and got it. But Lewerke was just sort of all over the place there, and his footwork wasn't the greatest in terms of that, and that's why he was all over the place. The second issue I had with Lewerke, and this was particularly true in the beginning of the game, there were receivers running open all over the place, and he just refused to throw in the ball. And he would get back there, one, two, three, oh, there's lots of green space in front of me, I'm running. And which is fine against Bowling Green, and it kept the chains moving and kept the offense on the field, and it wasn't a turnover, right? So all of those things are good, but on the other hand, when your receivers are open, you got to let it, fly. You got to deliver the ball, and you got to deliver it on time and on target, and the offense is going to be much more efficient. So that part was, and in that sense, you're like, you want to know what? Those are good numbers for what, the fifth start of his career. It was a reasonably good performance, but on the other hand, there are so many things he can improve on, and you get the sense that he will improve on it, right? You don't get the Andrew Maxwell sense or Tyler O'Connor sense of this is who he is and it's not going to get any better.
All right.
You get the sense that, yeah, he is going to get better and things are going to get better. So even though he had a good game stat-wise, it really wasn't a good game from an offensive efficiency standpoint. And you would expect there to be growth between game one and game two.
Yeah, I mean, he was getting away with stuff against Bowling Green. He's got a lot to clean up pretty fast because, you know, while Western Michigan doesn't have a great defense, but it's going to get tougher and tougher as we go on here.
Yeah, and by the way, Western Michigan gave USC all it could handle. All it could handle and nearly pulled off the upset. And so that game looks a lot more difficult than it did to start the season.
Although I don't think Western Michigan can throw the ball very well. So I think it plays in our defense's hands a little bit more, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. The other thing, while we're on Western Michigan and free associating, I just want to give the Western Michigan coaching staff and the USC coaching staff, for that matter, a lot of credit. They got a blind snapper into the game to kick an extra point, and I just thought that was a classy thing to do, right? USC agreed not to rush an extra point early in the game or rush a field goal early in the game. And the Western Michigan coaching staff decided that, you know, that the game sort of got out of hand, and they agreed to what out of hand would mean prior to the game, that they would go ahead and not rush the kicker on an extra point or a field goal. And that happened. And this kid got the moment of his life, and I think that's what college football is all about. And the coaching staffs of both USC and Western Michigan should really be commended for making that moment happen.
So the snapper is legally blind, is that right?
Yeah, the long snapper is legally blind.
Wow.
And he fired a strike to the holder, an absolute strike. Yeah, it was an absolute class act. By Western Michigan, and credit the USC coach to reaching out to Western Michigan as the week went on and trying to make this happen. I mean, I think that's special that the coaching staffs on both sides are able to get together and work this out. So I thought that was impressive, and
that's great.
Yeah, it's really cool. Another sort of impressive thing along the same lines, DB. Happened in the Michigan State Western Michigan Bowling Green game. Tyson Smith, who had a stroke last year, picked the ball off and returned it to the house for a touchdown. How awesome was that?
Incredible.
I mean, think about it. And I, first of all, just physically coming back from a stroke is impressive enough, right? Just getting back to normal. Never mind getting back into NCAA football shape. And never mind actually getting to play in the game. And then picking the pass off and running it back. I've never been happier for a Spartan. I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but that's the truth. It reminds me of other sort of like big Michigan State moments in different ways. Seeing like Courtney Hawkins come back from like one of those halo injury things. Seeing that happen, or
Am Campbell.
Am Campbell. That's a great example. Seeing Am Campbell come back, how fantastic that was. I'm happy for Tyson Smith. Good for him. It's for people that haven't dealt with stroke victims or haven't met stroke victims or haven't had that in their life. Tell you what, it's brutal. And what a stroke can do to your body is absolutely brutal. And the fact that Tyson Smith is back from having a stroke and back and playing at full speed and able to do what he did on the field is a remarkable testament to the will of that young man. And we should just all be thrilled to death for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we covered optimism. Now we're sliding into pessimism, DB. we're not into full blown pessimism yet. We'll get there. We're starting off with light pessimism. The running back crew, DB, and more importantly, LJ Scott, 2 fumbles. Holy cow! When is this guy gonna? When is he gonna start protecting the ball?
There's a place on the bench for LJ Scott. That's all I can say. I mean, right after he did that, you just don't have a lot of chances. And he's a junior, I believe. He had 15 carries, and all he got out of it was about 39 yards. And
yeah.
I'm just thinking Holmes and London are going to have to carry the running back, carry the running backs. I was very impressed with London. I am not impressed with Scott at all. I mean, Scott's going to have to work his way back to the end of the lineup, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, see, here's what happens when you start fumbling on a regular basis. And you get a reputation as a fumbler. Which Scott is developing, and frankly, it's well-earned, is that other teams start raking at the ball, right? And so when so let's just say you don't have a reputation as a fumbler. When you go into the pile, you go down, and that's pretty much it. When LJ Scott goes into a pile now, people are grabbing at that ball because they think they can get it to come out. And let's face it, so far they've been right. And so there's an issue here, and he's got to figure it out because, I mean, of the three backs, DB, he's undeniably the most talented and the toughest to bring down and the shiftiest runner. I saw a great line on Twitter, and I forget who it was from, so I can't give him credit, but they were talking about Gerald Holmes and said Gerald Holmes looks like he's running like the Kool-Aid guy. He's always running like that, just running angry like he wants to run through walls, which I thought was just a hilarious line. And Madre London showed some skill as well, and so he did it well. But, I mean, LJ Scott's got to get this figured out. Maybe he's got to go to the Tiki Barber School of Ball Carrying. I just don't know what it is. I mean, if you remember. if people don't know what we're talking about, Tiki Barber had a huge reputation as a fumbler coming out of college in his first few years in the NFL. And he made some adjustments in how he carried the ball, and he stopped fumbling. And it was a conscious decision on his part to say, hey, I am never fumbling again. And that's what happened. And so LJ Scott's got to get into that mode. And whether he's got to carry a football around campus where all of the Michigan State student body try to knock it out of his hand, or he's got to, you know, what else they make you do, carry an egg around and make sure you don't break it, whatever it is.
It made me laugh because D'Antonio had preached and preached and preached to protect the football. The running backs had to protect the football. And what happens on the first, you know, series? It's like, you cannot do that. And it just looks to me like LJ Scott, he's out there thinking too much, and you just have to hold on to it. And it looks like when he gets hit, he can't take the hit, and then they're swiping at him, like you said. I mean, the Bowling Green defense, the word was on the street. Their hands were knocking at that ball, and he's a strong kid. So it really surprises me that he can't handle that. But something's going on in his head is really where this is all at.
Well, he fumbled twice, but there's more than something going on in his head, BB. This brings us to moving down the pessimism scale, the offensive line. If you take a look at Michigan State's running game yesterday, with one exception being the Madre London touchdown run, almost any running yard that a Michigan State player delivered was more a result of nifty feet and nifty footwork than it was of the offensive line opening up a hole. It was a result of visions, cutbacks, strength, whatever it is. But it wasn't because the Michigan State offensive line was opening up gaping holes for these running backs or the quarterback to run through. They were few and far between. And so frequently what you were seeing is you were seeing running backs, and this was true on both of LJ Scott's fumbles. They were getting hit oftentimes right after they got the ball or before they got to the line of scrimmage. And that's problematic. This Bowling Green defense isn't very good. The defenses are only going to get better. And this Michigan State O-line wasn't able to generate any running room whatsoever. And so now we're veering into the pessimistic side of things, because if this O-line can't generate running room against Bowling Green, who are they going to get running room against?
it's gonna be a long season. Yeah, well, and I'm not even sure about that. I mean, Washington didn't exactly put Rutgers away, so this could be a very long season. I think we'll see a lot more in the next game. But if the Spartans lose this game handily, and all these pessimistic things we're talking about come back to fruition, we could be looking at a 1-11 season. Basically, we might have enjoyed our one win.
Yeah, because all of a sudden this schedule is looking a lot harder than it did before the season started.
Yes.
Yeah, it feels like other schools have taken major steps forward, and Michigan State appears to be, at least on the offensive line, stuck in neutral. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, well, it goes back to that Chris Spielman joke about the game is won in the trenches. This is going to be like last year. You know, if there's not any pressure on the the quarterback, if there's not any, you know, running room for the offensive line creating, we're going to be
sliding down that pessimism scale, the defensive line.
Yeah.
So, first of all, let's give credit where credit is due to the defensive line. They kept the linebackers clean in the running game, and as a result, the linebackers were able to make a lot of plays and a lot of tackles, and that was the result of the defensive line doing their job and really occupying the offensive line. So we'll give them credit for that. The DB pressure on the quarterback was rare. It almost exclusively came off of blitzes. The Western Michigan quarterback, holy cow, he could have read a book back there before throwing the ball sometimes.
Yeah, he had a lot of time. And like we said before, if the Bowling Green quarterback was anybody else that the Spartans are going to play probably in Big Ten play, then the whole defense is in trouble, basically. I think next week is really going to be telling to see, against what I thought was not really the best, Western Michigan quarterback. If he's able to do damage against this defense and the Broncos win, now we're talking about, I think, a very long season, ahead.
Yeah, this game next week really worries me. It really does. And I'm assuming that Michigan State's going to be better from week one to week two, and they're going to make significant improvements. But this game really worries me because it's just hard for the defensive line to make the sort of jump that they really need to make for Michigan State to get to 6 or 7 wins. You could envision them making this jump in October or November, but by that point, it might be too late in the season.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've lost a bunch of games by then, if the only game the Spartans have won is this game against Bowling Green, and we're 2 months from now, then I think it goes to one thing I notice is we seem to do a lot of the same things on both sides of the ball, these jet sweeps, some of these things, and it goes back to me to Mark Antonio is a good coach, but maybe he needs to start surrounding himself with better assistants.
All right. We'll get to that in a moment. We're sliding down the pessimism scale. all right. So moving from you went offensive line, defensive line. The secondary, DB.
Yeah.
All right. So basically, basically Bowling Green is what I like to call below average to average max speed. And this secondary couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
There were receivers running free, especially in the first half. In the second half, it got better. In the second half, it got better, and DBs were locked up more on their receivers, and there was much better coverage. But in the first half, there were receivers running wild and free. And James Morgan wouldn't – I mean, he can't win a game of horseshoes, let alone hit a wide-open receiver. he's just – I mean, look, with James Morgan, I put money on cornhole against James Morgan. That's how confident I feel in beating him right now after watching him play against Michigan State. And so, yeah, I mean, he was really bad. And if it wasn't for Morgan being really bad, this is a completely different ballgame, at least in the first half, because Western Michigan should have put up at least 28 points in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah, the Spartans were very fortunate that they were playing a very inferior opponent. I was surprised at the final score in the end. I guess I'll say that.
Yeah. And the really scary thing is it probably should have been 42-3 or 49-3 Michigan State. The L.J. Scott fumble should have been a touchdown, so that's 7 points right there. And then the turnover that leads to a Western Michigan touchdown, you take that off the board. This should have been a 42 or 49-3 game.
Yeah.
And so you take 35-10, I suppose. But you look at this, secondary and, whew, boy. I mean, Josh Butler looked good at times. Justin Lane got beat badly at times. He looked good at times. David Dowell looked good at times. Josiah Scott looked good on occasion. Grayson Miller and Kari Wills looked good at times. I don't know, DB. I just feel like as soon as we start hitting the pass happy teams, it's just run a skinny post. Drop back, run a skinny post. Woohoo! Middle of the field open like it always is against Michigan State. Touchdown. And if I'm any offensive coordinator anywhere in the country, you're just waiting to run a wheel route in Michigan State. You're sitting there filming going, they haven't stopped the wheel route in 10 years.
Right.
They're not going to stop now. Third and 18, need a touchdown, run the wheel route.
Yeah, I'd say looking at the schedule, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 7 quarterbacks on that schedule from Notre Dame all the way through the Big Ten season that will just destroy the Spartan secondary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just rip it apart, which means the Spartan offense is going to have to is going to have to keep the defense off the field. But if the offensive line isn't creating any space for the running backs to run, how's that going to happen?
Right. It's going to be the offense is it's going to be the offense is going to score, you know, against a good defense. They're only going to score 10, maybe 17 points, and the Spartans are going to get blown out like a bunch of times. It's going to happen. Yeah, 8 times. I mean, I'm being doomsday here, Satchmo, because I'm not feeling like this is going to be better than last year. But, I mean, if we get to the end of the season and this was our win, can Mark D'Antonio survive that? If this team finishes
1-11?
I don't
see how D'Antonio survives a 1-win season. Now, I don't think Michigan State's going to have a 1-win season. I'm just saying that there needs to be some fixing. All right, which gets us to the final note of pessimism. And for those of you that noticed, we skipped over special teams. And I skipped over special teams for a reason. We had a field goal kicker, a place kicker. Look, here's the thing. I love kickers, all right? I get a bad rap for hating kickers. The thing is, I love good kickers, and I love good punters. All right? I love me some good kickers and love me some good punters. I was one of the chief cheerleaders and proponents of Morton Anderson getting into the NFL Hall of Fame.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Morton Anderson was dynamite. Yeah. He was great.
I also believe Jason Hansen. And you know me, I'm not a Lions fan. I also believe Jason Hansen should be in the NFL.
Yes,
I agree. To a certain degree, Jason Hansen redefined kicking long field goals in the NFL. He actually changed the position in ways people just don't appreciate. I do like kickers. I do appreciate kickers. I've even kicked myself on occasion. So this is not me being anti-kicker. It's just that here's what happened in special teams. The field goal kicker converted some extra points. Yay. I can convert extra points.
At least he made them. At least he made them. Weren't we having a problem with that last year, too?
Man.
I thought we were having some issues kicking extra points sometimes last year.
Yeah, we did occasionally. The punter, Hartberger, had some good punts.
Yeah, he did.
Stewart on the returns, mixed bag. Some okay kickoff returns. Should have fielded a punt that he didn't. That's an ongoing bugaboo. And so mixed turns, but it just feels incomplete. But I just wanted to use the special teams and the ongoing bugaboo of not fielding punts to transition into what appears to be a longer-term and final note, most pessimistic note, is the coaching staff here. And for longtime listeners of this pod, as the kids like to call it, they know that I've defended this coaching staff on a regular basis. This is the same coaching staff that brought Michigan State to the college football playoffs. Mostly the same coaching staff that went to the Rose Bowl. Same coaching staff that won all these Big Ten championships, right? And so it's not like these people don't know how to coach. So that isn't the issue at all. Yet, there's a sense of staleness, DB, surrounding this team and some of the things happening with this team. this failure to field the punt, for example, this isn't a one-time issue. This has been going on for 4 or 5 years. Michigan State punt returners just making bizarre decisions out in the field that caused Michigan State to lose so much field position. And this has been going on for long enough where you can't say, oh, it's just the players. No, this is the coaching staff. This is the coaching staff not getting its message through and not affecting change. Now, I'm sure Michigan State held a lot of its offense back because they didn't want to show everything against Bowling Green, even though they ran a trick play, which I thought was pretty cool, even though it didn't work. So I'm sure that the play calling is pretty vanilla, and my hope is these jet sweeps and stuff are part of Michigan State's vanilla play package. My sense is they're not, and that's sort of scary.
Yes, you're right about that. Oh, my gosh, yeah. The offense is very, very just lacks creativity. You know, at the end of the day, look, I know the coaches can't sprinkle fairy dust on these guys and make them, you know, the 2013 Spartans, you know. But the fact is that there is a pattern going on here, like you said, and it's troubling.
Yeah, it's troubling. And I noticed a few things with the play calling that I actually sort of like, which was we saw a lot more slant routes this year that we've seen, and it's almost like Michigan State's offense going back to what worked a couple years back. So you saw a lot of the quick slant routes, and yeah, they were trying to give Lewerke easy throws, but frankly, we've got receivers that are good at working inside, whereas previous years we've had receivers that were much more suited to work on the outside. The problem is those outside throws are more difficult throws. And the inside throw is a little easier to make. And so you might just see more success for that because you've got receivers who are better suited to making easier throws, throwing opportunities for the quarterback. And that's just going to help. And that's going to help on the play calling as well, a little more versatility of the receiving core. That said, I don't know. It didn't feel like the Michigan State coaching staff had that many answers for a running game that was going absolutely nowhere. And so maybe this is a team that's got to throw the ball 40 times a game in order to win. And maybe that's the answer. Now that would be a waste of 3 running backs, but maybe that's the answer. But it just feels like some of these mistakes are just, why can't you cover a wheel route? Please tell me why in 10 years Michigan State hasn't figured out how to cover a dual route.
Yeah.
Why is it whenever Michigan State gets safeties lined up on a wide receiver on the inside? Look, offensive coordinators figured out this defense 3 or 4 years ago. They knew. Go back to the Baylor game, DB. What did Baylor try to do? They tried to isolate a wide receiver on a safety and hit that matchup all day. That play still works. Get a wide receiver on a Michigan State safety, use formation to create the mismatch, drop back, and watch the wide receiver run past the safety.
Yeah.
It works every time. And let me tell you what, if I can see it, every coach in America can see it.
Well, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, look, loyalty to staff is great. But if the staff isn't doing their job, I want to point out, Alabama, I believe, Dashville, has a new offensive coordinator every year. Just about, it seems like. They've got a new whiz kid now from the Patriots. And there's nothing wrong with changeover on staff to keep it fresh, to keep it going. New voices, new opinions. I think it's time for that on some areas of the Spartan football team. I think offense, play calling, that two-headed monster that's going on there needs to go away. I think we need brand new special teams coaches. And I think secondary needs a brand new, needs a facelift too, because they've been making the same mistakes since 2009.
Yeah, it's pretty freaky. The same areas of weakness, the same, and look, we know that they spent a lot of time this offseason trying to address these things, right? They talked about it. Everyone knows what needs to get done. It just doesn't feel like much progress was made in that department. Maybe it's talent, but if you're making the same mistake over and over and over again, at some point you got to say, yeah, some of it is the players not executing, but a lot of it is coaches putting the players,
yeah,
not putting the players in a position to succeed.
Yeah. I agree. I know these are just kids, but, you know, it's a troubling trend. It's one thing if we looked at the team and, you know, every 4 or 5 years we were getting a little bit of this, but it's been an ongoing thing for quite some time. I mean, even when the Spartans were good and had those exceptional seasons, there were still mistakes being made that were very similar to this, and the Spartans were able to overcome that. But because there was a lot of other talent on the field in different places. You had an excellent offensive line. You had an excellent defensive line. You had excellent linebackers. You had Connor Cook. You had a great running game. You had great receivers. Well, when the talent fizzles out, then those things are going to be exposed and more noticeable.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You were able to paper over the flaws just because of the playmaking ability of a lot of the people on the field. And now those flaws can't be papered over anymore. And if you can't paper over the flaws, you better fix them.
Right.
Yeah, you absolutely have to fix them, and there doesn't seem to be any fixing going on. There seems to be a lot of spackling, but not a lot of foundation work.
Yeah, the Spartans are hanging wallpaper over big holes in the wall.
Yeah. They're hanging wallpaper without putting the drywall up.
And when you look around the Big Ten, as we talked about earlier, it's just it just feels like everybody's kind of moving ahead, and the Spartans are stuck in quicksand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really weird and sort of sinking feeling. And maybe we're overreacting to the first game, which is entirely possible. And we'll see them against Western Michigan, and we'll be like, oh, we are ready to go 10-3, or 10-2, or whatever. And
Not likely, but yeah, we could be surprised a little bit, yeah.
There's room for being surprised, and as we said, there's potential in some of these units. And if you see, even if you go back to the offensive line, which was sort of our slide down into pessimism, the one thing they did well is they did a good shot pass blocking. If you can give Lewerke time and give these receivers time, there is an opportunity to move the ball up and down the field.
Yeah, now it's time to work on the run blocking. Yeah, there's potential there with the offensive line, which I thought could be the case. I even will go so far as to say there's potential with the defensive line. It doesn't seem hopeless, but it's going to take a lot of work.
Yes, it is going to take a lot of work. And I was pleasantly surprised by Kenny Waleeks. I just thought that guy's got a motor that doesn't quit. I mean, he was consistently maximum effort, getting in the mix of things, and definitely impressed with that.
And
all right, so
I'm gonna throw this one out. The other intangible here, good for our crowd. They made a lot of noise. It was close to a sellout, and they showed up. And I was very impressed with that. And, you know, considering the off season we had, you know, it could have been like half filled in Spartan Stadium. And good for them. We have good fans, and they showed up, and A-plus to the crowd. It made noise.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. A plus to the crowd. We get on the crowd when we don't like what we're doing. We should praise them when they do a good job. And you're right. It was a good crowd. It was a nice day.
It was a perfect
frankly.
Day.
Yeah. It was. But it was a good crowd. And it was sort of nice starting it a noon start. It felt like football. It's that Friday night start under the lights is fun, but it felt nice to have sunshine and, you know, all the pageantry and that sort of thing surrounding college football. It felt much more a part of the atmosphere and the environment, and I like that. I think the Friday night starts are nice, but I think doing these Saturday noon starts as well, mixing them in now and then is good as well. Because there's just something special about Saturday afternoon in college football and being part of that opening weekend excitement. And so that's pretty cool. And so I'm glad that was done. So that looked good. All right, how are we feeling about this Western Michigan game, DB?
Well, I'm just thinking about how Western Michigan played against USC, which is, USC has a phenomenal offense, and but USC gave up 31 points, I believe, to Western Michigan. So, you know, obviously USC can be alarmed, but this is not the Trojan podcast. This is the Spartan pod. And so I kind of think that I was impressed that Western Michigan could run the football. I think Western Michigan has no defense. I think the Spartans actually can put up some points on the board against Western, and I think where this is going to hinge is because I don't think Western's quarterback is great, and they replaced a lot of people, and they're still learning some things. So they're going to come in fired up to Spartan Stadium, but I think the Spartans can get by. This could be a very high-scoring, ugly game, though.
Yeah, so this is... This has the potential. This is a scary game for Michigan State because the Bowling Green offensive line didn't really test the Michigan State run. I mean, the Michigan State defensive line looked good against the Bowling Green running game, and we don't know whether that's because Bowling Green is just that bad or whether the Michigan State defensive line is just that good against the run. We have no idea.
Yeah.
And this is the game that we find out. And if the answer is somewhere in between, Western Michigan's going to put up some numbers. And so that's the problem, right? And so fortunately for Michigan State, the strength of their team is the linebackers. You know, they can walk the linebackers up the line of scrimmage. They can do a lot of things. And so they have that going for them. I don't think this is going to be a high-scoring game, DB, in that I think both teams are going to try and grind it out. I have a feeling Western Michigan is going to grind it out somewhat more successfully, but Michigan State can move the ball through the air a little bit. I'm hoping, beyond hope, that this is like a 27-20 Michigan State win. That to me, that's what it feels like. I feel like if this gets into the 30s, Michigan State, as much firepower as they have, won't have enough to keep up with Western Michigan. And so if this game is played in the 20s, Michigan State wins. If this game is played in the 30s, Western Michigan wins, which is usually the opposite of any MAC game that you're talking about, right? Normally, you're saying if this game is in the 20, the MAC team's got a shot to win. If the game's in the 30s, the Big Ten team's going to win. I think in this case, if this game is in the 20s or even the teens, that plays in the Michigan State's hands because they've got enough playmakers to pull the game out. But the higher scoring the game is, the worse this is for Michigan State.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that this game is this is one of the five that I said the Spartans had to win in order to make a bowl game, and then you have to steal one somewhere else from some tough competition. And so this is a must-win game for Michigan State in order to maintain the possibility of going to a bowl game. It's also a pivot game. The Spartans play well in this game, and they look improved. They go into a bye week, unfortunately. I wish they didn't have it so soon, but they go into a bye week. and they can be confident going to play against Notre Dame. If they're terrible in this game, I don't see that, you know, a bye week and another week of practice is going to fix gaping holes. And so we could be in for a very rough, long season if this looks bad this week coming up.
Yeah, rough and long sounds about right if this week goes badly. So
yeah.
We'll have to wait and see on that. All right, with 5 minutes sort of left in the podcast here, other things sort of from around college football land that you noticed that you thought you liked, you were impressed with, what did you see out there?
Well, just staying in the Big Ten real quick, you know, the amount of points that everybody else was scoring was interesting. Ohio State was very shaky to start with, and then they came roaring back. Iowa looked very impressive offensively. Michigan did a very good job against probably an undermanned Florida team. And who else? Rutgers held in there with Washington, but the surprise was Maryland has an offense. I rubbed my eyes and couldn't believe Maryland was up by that much.
Yeah. Yeah, Maryland hung in there and beat Texas, right? And
on the road.
On the road. And I got to admit, I'd never root for Maryland for anything. But I enjoyed them beating Texas because all that hype surrounding Tom Herman just annoyed me.
Yeah, Charlie Strong got a bad deal there.
Yeah.
Shame on Texas. Maybe they deserve that. But, yeah, that was interesting. Also, what did I see here? The Florida State quarterback is gone already. He's out for the season. With
yeah.
The Rangers, so that hurts Florida State.
Yeah, Alabama beat the living daylights out of him. That hurts.
Yep.
That hurts big time. Yeah, that Alabama just bruised and battered Florida State. And so I thought that was interesting. A couple interesting things I saw. Howard University going down to UNLV as a 45-point underdog and pulling off the victory, DB.
That was impressive to see that. That was a surprise, yeah.
That was a surprise. And then Liberty beat somebody. Who did Liberty beat? Liberty beat hold on, I got to look this up, because Liberty beat a big team too.
Yeah, and while you're saying that, the big comeback was Sunday night, UCLA coming all the way back on Texas A&M. But times are tough with football in the state of Texas, I guess. And that was shocking, to say the least, that UCLA did that.
Yes, it was. Kevin Sumlin on the hot seat, a member of the Board of Regents down in Texas, down in Texas A&M, has already said he wants him fired.
I would never want to be a football coach. I don't think you could pay me enough to be a
The Liberty Flames, by the way, beat the Baylor Bears 48-45.
Ah, wow. Well, you know, Baylor's another one. They deserve it, Stanchel.
Yeah, they do deserve it. But congratulations to the Bison of Howard University for pulling off the biggest upset in college football history. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah,
another team,
I was pretty impressed by that.
Another team that looked real good, real quick, I saw the end of the game between Virginia Tech and West Virginia, and I was very impressed with Virginia Tech. They held off West Virginia. Both the quarterbacks, the West Virginia quarterback looks pretty good, and that freshman, the true freshman playing quarterback, that Jackson for Virginia Tech, looks pretty good. So, you know, maybe with Florida State injured, maybe the Hokies are going to be making some noise in that conference this year. It's early,
yeah,
but who knows?
Could be. And I don't mean to say this in a derogatory way, but it's going to sound like it. Doesn't that West Virginia quarterback just look like the type of quarterback that West Virginia should have?
yes, he does look like a West Virginia guy.
Yeah, it's just whatever West Virginia quarterback, if you like, went to Hollywood and say, give me a West Virginia quarterback, to me, that's what a West Virginia quarterback would look like. I was impressed. Purdue hung in there against Louisville, didn't pull it out. Saw some of that. Yeah, Virginia Tech looks like it's got some players. When you watch the rest of college football, BB, and we'll exit sort of on this note. Did watching everyone else play college football make you feel better about the Michigan State football team or more depressed about the state of the Michigan State football team, the quality of the Michigan State football team?
I felt a lot more unsure, and I wouldn't say depressed, but I just felt like, yeah. It made me a little squeamish, to tell you the truth. How about you?
Yeah, depressed, you're right, is probably the wrong word. Unsettled is the right word because, I mean, in a weird way, everyone looks better than Michigan State at this point, except for Bowling Green. And And so, yeah, watching, I mean, I was glad college football is going if you're listening to us live, go ahead and click on the Georgia Tech-Tennessee game. Georgia Tech's up 14-7 right now in Tennessee. I'm not sure Michigan State could beat either team.
Right.
And if you're listening to the stream, thank you for listening. We appreciate you listening. Tweet at us and of the major conference teams, which teams do you feel conference Michigan State's going to beat? It's hard to go into any of these games with a ton of confidence.
Yeah, we'll see more in the coming weeks. Week 2 offers some interesting things, and there's other games. I believe we'll keep an eye on Georgia and Notre Dame to see how Notre Dame does against a better opponent. And also Ohio State, I think, has a big tilt with Oklahoma. And, another former Spartan, Pat Narduzzi, had a lot of problems with a small school. I think they eked it out in overtime. It was Youngstown State, actually.
Yeah, Youngstown State. Well, Michigan State had its share of problems with Youngstown State, if you remember. So Narduzzi had some problems, and Narduzzi, in typical Narduzzi fashion, is not making his players available to the media on Penn State week. So it'll be interesting to watch that as well. So yeah, no, Penn State, Pitt, Ohio State, Oklahoma. Two of the games definitely will be watching. Then, of course, Michigan State against Western Michigan, hoping for the best. All right. I think that's hoping for the best is a good place to end the podcast. We'll be back again Thursday with a podcast remembering Judd. And we'll share some of our favorite Judd stories. If you want to tweet us at Sparty Talk to share some of your Judd stories, go ahead and do that. If we get some good ones, we'll share them on the air, and we'll share them on the podcast, and yeah, we'll have some fun remembering Judd. We'll talk about some of the players Judd coached. We'll talk about some of those Michigan State basketball teams. And just so you know, I'm willing to give you, DB, and I want you to think about this. I'm willing to give you, you choose five players. All right, I will take Magic Johnson and Steve Smith. You choose five players from the rest of Michigan State history. I get Magic Johnson and Steve Smith. I guarantee I can put together a team that beats your five players.
Do they all have to have played under Judd, or is this the whole history of Michigan State basketball?
Whole history of Michigan State basketball.
Okay.
Actually, take seven.
And you get to start with Magic and Smith.
I get to start with Magic and Smith.
Okay.
That's the challenge.
All right.
And anyone listening can take this challenge too. I start with Magic and Smith. Good luck. That's all I have to say. Those were Judd's two best players. I will maintain, as of now, as of we talk right now, those are the two greatest players in Michigan State history. Magic and Steve Smith.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. A taste of the discussion to come.
Game on.
But game on. But yeah, we will remember Judd on Thursday, and we hope you should tune in for that. We thank you for giving us your time on this podcast.
As we said, no music to mark the passing of Judd Heathcote. And until Thursday, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.